Please join me in 2 Kings chapter number 14, where we'll repeat some of the information we had at the end of last session, because it was very quickly presented, and I want to make it a little bit better this time around. The timing of these events we know are happening during the reign of Amaziah, the king of southern Judah, and Jeroboam, the king of northern Israel. And that places it in the 8th century B.C. I think we're actually talking into the 760s of that time period, which is about 40 years prior to the destruction of northern Israel at the hands of the Assyrians. Now, our last story had the Assyrians actually repent under God's threat of judgment, at least for a short period of time, very brief period of time. And that came under the prophetic work of Jonah, although he was a reluctant prophet. And that prophet also predicted that things would get better for the northern kingdom of Israel before they got worse again. And so that's what this passage in 2 Kings chapter 14 tells us. Verse number 24 is where I want to begin again. This is about King Jeroboam of the northern kingdom of Israel. He did what was evil in the sight of He who is. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. So northern Israel, under King Jeroboam, continued to worship the golden calves. They supposedly were worshiping He who is through those, but it was a twisted sort of religion. And so they're always critiqued for that, allowing that to continue on. And that actually is going to come up in some of our prophetic books that we're going to next. However, something did happen during the reign of Jeroboam that was good. Verse number 25, he, meaning Jeroboam, restored the border of Israel from Lebo Hamat, that's up near the city of Dan. It's the southern entrance to the valley of Baca, the Baca Valley, between the Lebanon and Anti-Lebanon mountains. So from there, as far as the Sea of the Arabah is the desert region by the Dead Sea. So the Sea of the Arabah is the Dead Sea. That whole area from Dan all the way down to Moab, by the Dead Sea, had been taken over by Syria and then abused, the people in it, abused by the Assyrians several decades ago in the chronology that we're looking at here. And so the Israelis had lost control of that region. But there was a prophecy made that eventually it would come back under the control of the Israelis. And so that becomes fulfilled by Jeroboam. That's the point of this passage. Now, who prophesied that? It says, according to the word of He who is, the God of Israel, which He spoke by His servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was from Gath-Hepher. Gath-Hepher is somewhere in the region of Nazareth and Cana in the New Testament period. For He who is saw the affliction, that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, for there was none left, bond or free, and there was none to help Israel. So they were in a mess. The eastern side of northern Israel was in an absolute mess. And so God had pity on them, and use Jonah to give them a heads up. Hey, It won't always be this way. There is a time coming when you will get your freedom back in this area. But, verse 27, he who is had not said that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, so he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. So even though God had said that there would be judgment and that there would be the allowance of the Syrians and the Assyrians to cause trouble for northern Israel, God had not said that he was going to wipe out the Israeli people. That's not in the cards. That is not in the future. There will always be a remnant that God will continue to work with. That was his promise to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and then also to David and others. Let's leave northern Israel momentarily. We'll get back to them in a moment and see what's going on down in Judah. And for that, we need to go to 2 Chronicles, chapter number 26, verse number 6. Now, this is about King Amaziah, or his other name is Uzziah, who is in control in that part of the country. And he is a good man. He is being led by Zechariah, the prophet, who is instructing him in the fear of the Lord. All right? So here's some of the things that is happening in southern Judah. Verse 6, he went out and made war against the Philistines, and he broke through the wall of Gath and the wall of Jabneh and the wall of Ashdod, and he built cities in the territory of Ashdod and elsewhere among the Philistines. So Amaziah, or Uzziah, dealt with the Philistine uprisings or attacks and troublemaking there on the coast, on the west side of the kingdom of Judah. Keep these places in mind because they're going to come up in a prophecy in a bit. Verse number 7, God helped him against the Philistines. So this was at the hand of God that King Uzziah pushes against the west border. And also against the Arabians who lived in Gur Baal. That's probably down in the south deserts, down in the north end of the Sinai Peninsula. And also against the Muinites. We've seen them before. They seem to be a little offshoot of the Mount Seir people, the people from Edom. They've caused trouble for Judah before, and so this good king is pushing back against things like that. Then we have something that's interesting. Verse 8, the Ammonites paid tribute to Uzziah. Now, the Ammonites don't even share a border with Judah. They are on the east side of the eastern Israeli territory. And so something has happened where the Ammonites are trying to pay back the Judeans with tribute money under King Uzziah. And then his fame spread even to the border of Egypt, for he became very strong. So Egypt is off to the south west from Judah, and so that's a neighbor that he is also making an impression upon. Verse number 9, moreover, Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate, that's on the northwest corner of the walled city of Jerusalem. It's important to understand that Uzziah's father, the previous king, had gone to war with northern Israel, lost, and northern Israel came down and tore down a 400 cubic section, 600 feet, of the northern wall between the gate of Ephraim and this corner gate. And so here we are a few decades later, and Uzziah is, he's rebuilt that wall, and he is beefing up the towers along that wall. So Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate, at the valley gate. Now that's, the valley gate is at the junction between the most ancient city of Jerusalem, that is the city of David, and the new Solomonic walled city that happened whenever he built the temple and his palace complex and saw all of that. The location of the Valley Gate is probably just a little bit south of the modern Israeli Dung Gate, if you look on a modern city map. All right, then also at the angle, and he fortified them. So he's basically beefing up all of the fortified protective points for the city of Jerusalem. He does not want Jerusalem to lose to attackers again. He built towers in the wilderness. These are fortification positions that he can put supplies and soldiers in. And he cut out many cisterns, so he's got to have a lot of water that is available for his use across his country. For he had large herds, both in the Shephelah. The Shephelah is the transition area from the flatlands at the Mediterranean coast up to the hills of Judah itself. So he's got lots of herds in the Shephelah and in the plain, that's down on the coast, which used to be Philistine-controlled territory. Now he's running his herds down there. And he had farmers and vine dressers in the hills and in the fertile lands, for he loved the soil. So he is a man that sees the benefit of beefing up your agriculture and your animal husbandry. Moreover, Uzziah had an army of soldiers fit for war in divisions according to the numbers in the muster made by Jehiel, the secretary, and Maaseiah, the officer, under the direction of Hananiah, one of the king's commanders. So they have got a good military force ready to go. It's probably partly a standing army at a core, plus all of the reservists, as we would say, all of the militia members that are ready to go and join in any type of military action. So verse 12 says, the whole number of the heads of fathers' households of mighty men of valor was 2,600. Now that's the commanding officers. 2,600 commanding officers. Under their command was an army of 307,500 who could make war with mighty power to help the king against the enemy. Now, is that the standing army, or is that the totality of all those capable of fighting in southern Judah? I don't know. I suspect that it's the totality of both the core standing army that are always serving, beefed up by the militia members that train on a regular basis. A little bit more, verse 14. And Uzziah prepared for all the army shields, spears, helmets, coats of mail, bows, and stones for slinging. So he makes sure that all his soldiers are well supplied with what they need to accomplish their mission. And that mission is to defend Jerusalem and Judea against attacks from elsewhere. In Jerusalem, he made machines invented by skillful men to be on the towers and the corners to shoot arrows and great stones. And so he actually has military designers come up with the plans for machinery that can quick fire or multiple fire arrows and perhaps javelins, as well as something like a catapult or a scorpion sort of thing that can toss large stones a good distance and with great force. And so he has these designed and then built, and he has them installed on those towers that he's placed all around the city of Jerusalem. This is one of the reasons that Jerusalem became so hard to overcome by first the Assyrians. They never took Jerusalem over. And then later, the Babylonians will have a really hard time taking Jerusalem because Uzziah is really beefing up the city defenses. And so his fame spread far, for he was marvelously helped till he was strong. And so that's the situation. In northern Israel, we have a pretty strong leader, Jeroboam. And in southern Judah, we have a pretty strong leader, Azariah or Uzziah. Amaziah. It's Azariah. Azariah, also named Uzziah. In northern Israel, the strong leader is weak in his relationship with God. He allows the golden calf worship and apparently some idolatry along with that. In southern Judah, though, the strong leader is also strong in his faith, and that's a good combination. We now begin seeing more and more written prophetic books. We already saw Jonah. Now we're going to go to the book of Amos. And so the Old Testament is now going to start being written down with more prophetic books. I believe that the words of Amos happened pretty quickly after the story of Jonah. And so we can't pin it down to any specific date, but I'm guessing it's probably still in the late 760s, early 750s. We do know the kings, though, that were reigning when this was written, because it's mentioned in the introductory material. Amos chapter 1, verse 1. The words of Amos, who was among the shepherds of Tekoa. Now, Tekoa is a city of the country of Judah. It's south of Bethlehem. Actually, I think it might be south of Hebron, even. But it's down in the south part of Judah, down on the edge of the wilderness. And this guy is, he's not a priest, he's not a Levite, he's just a workaday shepherd. Later, we'll hear that besides shepherding, he also took care of sycamore fig trees. So he's just a workaday guy. But God's word comes to him and makes him into a prophet. And he's not a prophet to southern Judah, where he grew up. He becomes a prophet to northern Israel, the place that's got the problem with the golden calf worship. And so he is specifically sent to Beth-El, the southern city in northern Israel, where the golden calf, representing Yahweh, supposedly, is worshipped. And that information will be more clear later in the book. So in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. Now, this earthquake is mentioned a couple of times. It's mentioned in Zechariah, I believe it. No, Zechariah is the next place it's mentioned. So this place and in Zechariah 14:5. But we don't have a date for it. We just know the general time period of the 8th century BC. And my friend in Israel, Omer, he is convinced that one of the archaeological digs that he works on from time to time has evidence of this very earthquake, and it is dated to the 8th century BC. So that's very intriguing to me. All right, let's now listen in to the prophecies of Amos, which come from visions that he received. Verse 2, he said, "He who is roars from Zion and utters his voice from Jerusalem." So God's temple is at Jerusalem. The Temple Mount is referred to as Mount Zion. And God gives his prophecies from there. And so they come out like a strong roar of a lion that needs to be listened to. And they have an impact. It says, "The pastures of the shepherds mourn, and the top of Carmel withers." Now, Carmel is that long ridgeline in northern Israel. It bumps out into the Mediterranean. That's the little bump on the coast of Israel. And it is looked at as a place of trees and greenery. It is a crown of beauty on the landscape, except when God's judgment falls and droughts happen and famine sets in. Then it withers up and becomes brown and dry. And so apparently the judgment of God is falling on northern Israel with some drought time. Verse 3. Now we begin some very specifically directed prophecies. "Thus says he who is, for three transgressions of Damascus, for four I will not revoke the punishment." And that becomes a literary hook. It becomes a device that's repeated over and over again. We start with the number three, and then we move to the number four to intensify it. And so Damascus is the first place that gets tagged. Damascus is the capital city of the country of Syria, and they have caused a lot of trouble recently for northern Israel. And so, "For three transgressions of Damascus, for four, I will not revoke the punishment, because they have threshed Gilead with threshing sledges of iron." Now, a threshing sledge is kind of a little platform of wood. It has little teeth underneath made of iron, and you drag it across the stalks of grain, and this breaks the kernels of wheat or barley out of their husk, and it's the first step in processing grain. And so what's being described here is how Syria has been digging deep into Israeli territory and causing all sorts of trouble, causing great difficulty and pain. And that's true. They'd taken over the entire eastern side of northern Israel. And so God now is going to judge them. Verse 4, "So I will send a fire upon the house of Hazael." Hazael was the king of northern Israel. He assassinated the previous king, took over, and immediately attacked northern Israel. "So I'm going to send a fire upon the house of Hazael, and it shall devour the strongholds of Ben-Hadad." Ben-Hadad was the son of Hazael, and just as problematic. "I will break the gate bar of Damascus and cut off the inhabitants from the valley of Avon." The valley of Avon is part of the region up in Syria. "And him who holds the scepter of Beth-Eden, and the people of Syria shall go into exile to Kir, says he who is." Now, Kir is up in Mesopotamia. And this is the first of several prophecies about what's going to happen when the Assyrians soon sweep down from the north through Syria and then down into Israel and do a lot of damage as part of God's judgment for sin. We know for a fact that when the later Assyrians come, they practice this idea of relocation of people groups. And so whoever they don't kill off, they bundle up into a caravan and they send them to another place in the Assyrian Empire to serve the needs of the empire. And then they'll bring somebody from another place and put him in to the place that they just emptied out. Well, the Syrians will be packed off to northern Mesopotamia, exactly as it says right here. And the reason for it is because of their sinfulness toward the people of northern Israel. Now, we've just been talking about the Philistines, so let's introduce the beginning of God's judgment on them according to Amos. Thus says he who is, for three transgressions of Gaza, for four, I will not revoke the punishment, because they carried into exile a whole people to deliver them up to Edom. Now, it seems as if the Philistines had been involved with the Edomites in causing trouble against the Israelis and against the Judeans, and that some Israelis and some Judeans ended up as slaves, as prisoners of war because of that. And so because of this compliance, because of this alliance, the Philistines are going to feel the wrath of God as well.